All right, so next up we have John Chadwick. John Chadwick is an architect. He's the assistant superintendent for facilities and operation for Arlington Public Schools. He leads all their capital planning efforts. He also managed the Discovery Elementary School, which is one of the zero energy buildings that we had as a case study. And so he's going to talk about that and talk about zero energy schools from the owner's perspective. So, John?
Thank you, Paul. Paul, you said you weren't going to tell them I was an architect. It didn't seem right among all these engineers. How do I make it?
Excuse the error, please.
Seems to be working. Oh, that one. Okay. Thank you. I think you've read all of this stuff before, so I'm not going to go through it. And this one, too. I work for a school division. I'm assistant superintendent of facilities and operations, as was said. We work for a school division. We have one goal. Our prime goal is student success and student achievement, and nothing should get in the way of that. And everything I do in my division is to support that. So it's in ways like making sure that instructional time is not lost, the buildings function and everything. It's also in making sure that we design buildings that kids want to can't wait to get to in the morning and don't want to leave at night. So Discovery was the first school that responded to a huge enrollment growth in our district. We've grown from about 18,000 to 27,000 in 10 years, and we're on our way to 32,000. First school we built for 10 years. And we were starting it right around the time that we had finished our strategic plan. It's a six-year strategic plan. And that strategic plan led directly to what we did with Discovery in going to zero energy. It called for optimal learning environments, which I prefer to call high-performance learning environments. And it called for sustainability and environmental stewardship. And in fact, we live in a community which is very, very motivated and very, very keen. I think we're silver on bike-friendly cities, and we're gold on walkability. So we pulled together a goal at the beginning of the Discovery process. That was in 2012. We opened the school in 2015. I still don't quite know how we did it. That we would create a learning environment inside, outside, and beyond the school in which teaching, learning, design, sustainability, and environmental stewardship would be integrated to a new level. We chose VMDO Architects because we believe the school they had done in the area, which is shown on the right here, got closest to what we were trying to achieve. They brought with them CMTA engineers, and between them, they proposed that we could achieve zero energy, and that, in fact, zero energy would be the catalyst that would allow us to achieve this goal. And I believe it was. Some things are really not negotiable for us. All of these things that constitute a high-performance school, some of these could be diminished in order to reduce energy consumption. We can't do that. So, for example, in Arlington and many school districts, schools are used as community resources. Our schools are used through the evenings. They're used at weekends. And we can't take that. And they're used during the summer as well, for summer camps and for county camps. So we can't take that thing and say, well, school's great for zero energy because they aren't used that much. No, they should be used that much. And ultimately, if you're going to build a building and you want to be responsible, you should use it as much as you reasonably can. And with all the things that we did for zero energy, none of these things that are listed here could be compromised, and they were not, and in many ways they were enhanced. We achieved it through an integrated design team. You're going to hear two themes today about achieving zero energy. One is integration, and the other one is culture change. Integration was particularly between the architect and the engineer, working backwards and forwards with one another. You won't achieve zero energy if the engineers go off and do their thing and the architects do their thing. Other members of the team were integrated too, but the architects and the engineers are the most clear. So we have started in new projects, because we're continuing with zero energy, to write zero energy specific RFPs. So, for example, we put in recent one we posted, the standards that we'd achieved at Discovery, plus a little bit. So we reduced the EUIs a bit. We looked at air infiltration. Biggest thing is EUIs. You put that in an RFP and you put in a very low EUI, the teams will understand what it is they have to achieve. We also needed to hire a dedicated construction team that understood what we were trying to do, because it's really important it gets built right, particularly important it gets built right. We had some issues there, and you become an integrated construction team. Again, we designed for full building utilization. That's maybe as many as 16 hours a day. Budget for zero energy from the outset. I can't prove this, but what we are desperately trying to achieve, and I believe we have on Discovery and will on future schools, is we're really not paying any more for the school building to be zero energy ready than we would have done if we had done a regular building. You will pay more for the renewable sources. And you have to do all of that QA and QC all the way through the project. The integrated ZE building is such that if you take out one major component, you're going to throw everything off balance and you won't achieve it. Paul already mentioned simulation and modeling. Our team did that constantly. It was an iterative process. Architect changed the wall in some way. What does that do to the engineering? And again, we had to commission everything. We did more commissioning than I actually knew existed. And we did measurement and performance. And you never stop measuring. And if you achieve that zero energy that first year, shame on you if you don't keep doing it, because what was the point? As an example of integration, I'm going to talk about the lunchroom for a minute, and this was something I think that Dan Nell found particularly appealing. We're heavily regulated in lunches. We have to provide portions and the right foods and everything. We just have baked goods and cereals for breakfast, simple baked or pre-cooked entrees, and a lot of fresh fruits, farm to table. There's a school garden which they use. So this does integrate with zero energy, because we have no fried foods. We have no deep fat fryers. That helps with the air removal. It helps with the heating, helps with the cooling. We have electric kettles for sauces and soups. And I discovered a week after the school opened, when the food service people were really complaining because the freezer and the refrigerator weren't working, that there was an airlock in the geothermal system and they were actually connected to it. Fortunately, we haven't had that problem again. Talking about operations and energy, this is where we begin to talk about school culture. Everybody understanding who's in that school, how they contribute to keeping that energy performance each year. The means we do that is through an energy dashboard, which is a whole lot more than an energy dashboard. I'm going to come back to that in a minute or two. As an owner of buildings now, I am much, much, much more motivated to make the systems as straightforward as possible and simple to operate. I'm not a big proponent of lighting controls, because teachers don't know how to use them, then the building gets a bad reputation. Discovery, if you talk to my director of maintenance, is his favorite building, because we have very little trouble with it. We have ground source heat pumps. We have heat pumps that serve two classrooms. If there's a problem and it's going to take more than half an hour to fix, they pop out a new one, put in a new one. The closets are on the outside of the classrooms. Often they don't even know in the classroom. The only thing that is a little different and new for our HVAC technicians is the dedicated outside air system. And for all school systems, it's very hard to compete for HVAC technicians. We fortunately have gotten over that recently because of pay, because it's not really the same as in the private sector. So how did we do? It took us about 6 months after the building opened to get the solar system up and running. That was partly a regulatory issue. We used 50% less energy consumed per square foot than a typical Arlington Elementary School, which is 72 kBTUs, and 33% less energy consumed per square foot than our next most efficient elementary school, which actually has a geothermal system that was put in 96 and renovated 2 years ago. Energy performance. We predicted and designed for 21.1 EUI with generation 21.5, so a small increase in generation over what we were predicting. Actual, and of course it varies a little bit from year to year, we've gotten 15.8, which is a lot better, as you can see. The generation is only 19, which is less than we'd predicted, but it's still 3.1 more than we're actually using. We, our building, received an EPA Energy Star certification of 100 out of 100. I think we'd have been a little disappointed if it hadn't, actually. And we are estimating that we're saving about $100,000 a year. At the time we put these in, and when we bid it was 2014, it was about $1.5 million more to put the solar arrays in. We bought them. We offered to say to the school board, look, you don't have to buy them. We can have a very efficient school. They said, yes, we will do that. We bid it as an alternate. I'll tell you how we're going to do that on future schools shortly. We have some challenges with our utility. Virginia doesn't have a particularly good climate for solar, and our utility provider, Dominion, is really focused on selling as much power as it can rather than being a service provider. At the time we opened the school, net metering maximum was 500 kilowatts, and it is now 1,000. We started out with a standby charge of $12,000 a month that they proposed to us, which, of course, made most of the savings go away. And we managed to negotiate that down to just over $1,000, and we had to stop because we had to open the building. We are generating quite a bit more each year. We've done that for 2 or 3 years now. The utility company allows us to keep that energy sort of on account for 3 years, then we lose it. So we've recently persuaded one of the delegates in Virginia to support a bill that would allow us and other school divisions to transfer our excess to the utility bills for other schools, which we really want to do. We were the trailblazer. No one had done this in Virginia before. Now there are some others. The learning experience, again, it's all about the students. And the point I want to make that you will get from these photographs is in schools today, every space inside the school, outside the school, and even beyond school's hours is a learning space because technology allows us to do that. So here you are seeing groups of kids working with teachers, working with one another in hallways, in spaces in hallways, in and around the building. Champion, very important. We had an amazing principal who was on the building committee from the beginning and really bought into it and has done any number of things to support our efforts. We've integrated zero energy with teaching, learning, and student success through the dashboard. And we focus on how everyone in that building can contribute to maintaining the low EUI without diminishing the learning experience. The school has a eco-action team rather than a school government, and our energy dashboard also records the way that kids get to school every day through transportation demand management. Energy dashboard, which you can look, you can go to Arlington Public Schools, go to our school's discovery, and you can get access to the dashboard. This is a very simple showing of what it's actually doing. It shows on the left live power consumption, live power production, and then the net difference. There are many more aspects to it that the kids and students have access to, and this actually is being written into the curriculum, and we are going to be rolling this out into other schools so that they can work with one another. So we learned that our vision and goals have to be established before we start. We have to pick a design team that shares our goals. The building's an integrated system from which no major element can be omitted or changed without jeopardizing zero energy performance. If you're just doing it to reduce utility costs, that's probably not the only reason for doing it because the payback does take some time. But the gains we believe in teaching and learning offset that. And if you started with zero energy, maintaining it is a lifetime commitment for the building. Well, so we achieved zero energy on a reasonable budget. We integrated teaching, learning, design, sustainability, environmental stewardship. We have effected culture change among all stakeholders in the school, and I believe we've created a school where students love to be and love to learn. This is an example of the success on the equinox. There is a sundial in the entrance canopy. Here the kids are having a lesson when the spot of sunlight is centered on a dot on the ground, which shows it was 12 noon. We were honored when we received the ASHRAE Award, or CMTA, I should say, received the ASHRAE Award on Saturday evening. We were honored when we were awarded the AIA 2017 Committee on the Environment Top 10 Award. We'd have been a little annoyed, I think, if we hadn't been. But what really means the most to us as a school division is that we won a U.S. Department of Education 2017 Green Ribbon Award. And we are thrilled about that because it reflects what's going on in the school and what is being achieved in the school, at least as much as the school itself. So you can achieve a zero energy school on a reasonable budget if you integrate the design team efforts. If the solar installation exceeds the budget, which it's likely to, we're doing the next ones through a power purchase agreement. So we're going to be leasing the roof space for $1 a year or something to a utility provider who will provide us with the energy, and we expect to still pay less for that energy than we would pay for the energy from the utility company. A zero energy school is a terrific catalyst for cultural change around teaching, learning, and sustainability, and any member of the team, and hopefully more than one, can be a champion for zero energy. Thank you. So I understand I have to ask now if there are any burning questions, and answer them if you have them. Are you going to answer? She is. It's a little high for you.
My name is Kitty Knauf with Energy Systems Group. My question, two questions. One is, what's the square footage of the building? The second question is, how much it costs to construct the total construction cost?
Okay, so I'm going to answer the first question. It's 98,000 square feet, and it's for 630 students. The second question won't mean very much to you. It cost us $43.5 million total project cost. That's really the only interest cost I'm interested in, because we have to fund all of it. There are any numbers of ways you can compare that cost to other schools. That was completed in 2015, and we've had huge escalation in our area since then. We live in a very expensive area anyway, so those are the numbers. I don't know how much they mean.
Thank you. Great presentation.
Thank you.
Graham Lynn, Sustainable Engineering Group. I'm just curious, you had some good comments early on about designing the building to be kind of fully used, fully utilized. When we're looking at schools, sometimes we struggle to figure out how to think about the summertime usage, and should we be designing to assume it'll be used more than maybe they think it'll be used now, or because it's a nice building?
I think you have to know your school division. And you have to have a frank conversation with them about what they're doing now and what they might want to do. And maybe there are ways in which, if they start to use the building more in the future, you can incrementally increase the amount of power that you're providing from renewables. So you have to have a really clear discussion with them. It's not really an issue for us. It's like we're going to use them to the maximum. So we have to design for that.
Chicago. So question, did you get any grants for, there are a lot of grants available for zero energy.
We got no grants. There weren't any available to us. And I would say that we tried to get the dashboard through the general contractor. It didn't work. It was never going to work. We learned that. And it was developed by the architect and the engineer. Mm-hmm. And we did pay them what we would have paid the contractor to do it, what was in the contract. But they put a huge amount of their time and effort into it, above and beyond. I know they spent way more than the funds we gave them. They wanted to do it. They believed in it. It's very much their building. And the thing with a zero-energy building, another really important point is you want to pick engineers who really care about that ongoing performance and don't abandon you the moment they hand over the keys.
Understand. Well, so congratulations. I think one of the things you did prove is that in order to have this kind of building, I think you need to have the buy-in from the owners. It's very, very important that they understand. A lot of times, that's as engineers and architects, we face that problem, is that we don't get the buy-in.
That's absolutely true, and I forgive me if I didn't emphasize that enough.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.